Blog Talk Radio.
Go.
Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the virtual neighborhood community of Life is a Sacred Journey. I am so excited that you're here this morning. It is freezing in California. And I know all my family back east is laughing at me when I say that because they just got dumped with a whole bunch of snow. And they're probably calling me a name that I cannot say on Facebook Live. But welcome, everybody, to Life is a Sacred Journey. It is so good to have you with us here again another Friday morning at 8 a.m. as the sun is coming up here in California. This morning, my brother Brett Sweet is joining us. He is a dear friend. Everybody that comes through Life is a Sacred Journey becomes my best friend. So, you know, I've got all these BFFs all over the world, and when I retire, I'm going to come visit all my BFFs. So I'm going to use my relationship with you like where you go to a bed and breakfast, and we've been doing this since 2015. So I got a lot of people to come visit. Isn't that cool? All right, so COVID needs to go away and so that we can get back out in the world and treat each other with love and kindness in the way that we didn't before COVID. So think about that. I'll drop that wisdom on you. So before we bring Brett to the microphone, he and I have had a wonderful conversation already this morning. And one of the things that I have to raise up to all of you is the Negro Baseball League and how excited I was to read in the New York Times. Yes, I still read the New York Times. And that now the Baseball League has decided to recognize the Negro League. And, you know, as my father used to say, a day late and a dollar short, but the reality is it's happening. And Brett and I were having a wonderful pre-conversation, and it's only the first step, my people. It's only the first step because they've made the statement of recognition, but yet there are some stats of some of the players in the Negro League that surpass the folks that have already been recognized in the baseball league. And so the next step is going to be, are you going to be honest about the statistics that make up this entire now baseball league? So, but we thank you. We thank you, baseball league, for making that tiny little baby step. But what I'm asking you to do now is take off your toddler shoes, put on your Nikes, and take the next step and put those stats in there, and let's find out who the best hitter was and who the best runner was, regardless of the color of their skin. And I want to say rest in peace to all of the men and women and the people in the community that supported the Baseball Negro League at the time that they were going through it, you all. They were going through it, and they did it because they loved the game. So thank you. Rest in peace, brothers, for what you brought. And the other is I've been getting a lot of phone calls from numbers. I have no idea what those numbers are. Some of them are restricted, so I can't call them back. But I just realized that this is scam season. Brett, you know about this. This is scam season. So if someone calls your house, I don't care who it is, even if you think you know the person, they sound like the person, they know information about you, never, never, never wire money to anybody. Don't do that unless you know you sat on Zoom and you talked to your brother, sister, uncle, cousin, bestest friend, and they said to wire it. But don't wire any money because you got an email, text, or a phone call. Sorry, doesn't work these days because people are scamming a lot. Hang up on anybody, like the Social Security person that called me the other day that said that there was a warrant out for my arrest because I didn't pay my Social Security. Well, first of all, I'm employed. My Social Security is paid through my check. Hang up on those people. Ask someone that you trust. Get a list. I've always told you, have a list of people. One, two. One is good. that you trust that you can run it by. So that reduces isolation and puts you in a place where you cannot be scammed. So make sure it's called the grandparent scam, where they call grandparents, oh, grandma, I'm stuck in XYZ, send me some money. That's one. The lottery scam, you've won all this money, call us. We need your social security number and your bank information to give you the money. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not how it works. Medicare fraud, when people are calling you again for your information saying it's open enrollment, even though that's closed, the reality is people are still doing that. The romance scam, billions of dollars in the romance scam. I know we're living in isolation right now. We're all feeling lonely. But people, you know what? Don't send money. If people love you, they're not going to ask you to send money that way and right after you've only been talking to them for a couple of weeks. You know, that just doesn't work. And then identity theft. Make sure that you change those passwords, have family members change your passwords, help you to do that. You do that on an ongoing basis. Thank you, my son, for reminding me. Do that, do that, do that all the time, okay? Change your passwords. And over this next weekend here, between now and January 1, don't forget to put new batteries in your fire alarm system, smoke alarm systems in your house. Okay, phew. I think I got everything. I just wanted to make sure that you were ready for the new year and that you're protecting yourself from anyone that may be trying to hurt you because they are. You know, I've never seen so many phone numbers from places. I don't even know people in some of the states where they sent the stuff. All right, let me talk to you about Brett Sweet. We just had a fundraiser. You all know about this. Because you, some of you came, and thank you for coming. And it was a virtual fundraiser, and the Friday prior, one of my colleagues said, oh, we've got somebody bought a ticket. His name is Brett Sweet, and we got to add him to the list because, as you know, we delivered stuff to people. Okay. I kept looking at the name going, Brett Sweet, Brett Sweet. I know Brett Sweet. How do I know Brett Sweet? But then, you know, you have those moments, they go by, you keep going. On the Saturday, I'm looking at Brett as we're moving from table to table thinking, I know him. And, you know, my little 63-year-old brain was like, but we don't remember how. And on that after we had the event, Brett and I got together and had an amazing conversation, and I realized that I knew Brett through his caregiving journey, and that's how I knew him. I knew him as a caregiver. I knew him as a donor because I went back and looked and saw that he actually donated to ASAB. And so it is so funny how the circle of life is and how things happen and what brings people together, even on the periphery, because we didn't connect like big time like this. But I did thank him when he donated, and, you know, I always write personal notes on my thank you letters, but we had never really physically connected in conversation or any other way. But yet the circle of life, this sacred journey of life, made our path cross again at a virtual wine tasting because Fern Stroud, who you also met, went to high school with Duke. You know, come on. Who is the mastermind of these wonderful human connections? I say it's God. I don't know who you say it is, but I say it's God. And it's a universal thing that I'm open to. So let me tell you, I'm going to bring up Brett's bio so that I won't miss a thing because I love everything that he has done. So over the last 20 years of his life, he has decided to become a social entrepreneur. That means someone who goes out into the community, sees a need, finds a need, and then fills that need by making sure that there's physical resources, financial resources, heart resources, resources to make that dream come true. That's Brett. And he started in the digital media companies and social enterprises, education companies. He created his first online music distribution system in 1996. So, whoa, way before Spotify and all these other wonderful programs that are out there, 1996. So that tells me a lot about my brother's IQ, which led to his passion for building systems and companies that change how people interact. We're always talking about that intersection where we interact. In March of 2016, Brett entered and won the Chevron eQuip project pitch, securing $3 million to build a business incubator, a co-working space in downtown Richmond. Richmond, a city that gets such a bad rap, but yet a city that is thriving right now, a city that new things are happening. He was a part of that and is a part of that. He also combines his passion with music. He worked with PolyGram. He's put together music now that he and I are talking about doing a concert that's all about caregiving and dementia and Alzheimer's. He has a beautiful wife. He has a novel that is called Among the Veils. Brett's like me. We don't know how to stop. We don't want to stop. We know that we have to live out our purpose, and our purpose is whatever the divine sends down and gives us the power to accomplish. And so I want to welcome to Life is a Sacred Journey and introduce to all of you Brett Sweet. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you.
Namaste. Good morning. Good morning. And also good morning.
Good morning in America.
Good morning in America. Yeah, and I think it's also probably evening somewhere else, but...
And I should warn your listeners ahead of time, I know you're going to be disappointed when I say this, I'm not actually out of family. I can't change that. It took a while for Michael to get over that, and then I know I sound like Steve-O from Jackass. I also cannot control that either. So if that's who you thought you were getting, I'm sorry. I might have some other entertaining moments that might help your commute.
Right.
I might help your day, but I wanted to get that out of the way so that I didn't start the chat.
Yeah, so I love that. I love that because I was thinking that the first
time. Yeah, and I always get that, like,
who is that guy?
And I'm like, well, you know, between Berkeley and dealing with young people in our community, there's something called the snap. Right,
that's right.
I learned at a very early age you gotta get ahead of it.
Get ahead of it. Get ahead of
you
it. Speak to it.
You know it's coming.
You know it's coming. So,
which I guess is a good.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. So, Brett, I want to give our virtual family an opportunity to hear your story. Everyone that comes to Life is a Sacred Journey, again, shares their sacred story. You know, I get to share my story bit by bit with our community, my siblings out there. But I want to ask, you know, about the personal story, and I want to know a little bit about your dad. I hope that's okay. And the reason is because, you know, when I did my homework and you sent us some information, your dad was a prominent Bay Area civil rights attorney and also a social entrepreneur. And so if I'm getting everything right, that was a while ago in a time when, you know, we know it wasn't so easy to do some of these things because my father was an entrepreneur as well. People getting money to finance projects as a person, always hard. So talk a little bit about, you know, that experience being, you know, looking in to your dad.
It's interesting. I think if my father was still with us, if we called him a social entrepreneur, he probably would be offended.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that concept doesn't make sense. And I think that goes back to his parents and his parents before him. My family is from a small town on the border of Central and South Florida called Jupiter, Florida. It's also known as West Jupiter Island. It's famously a sanctuary, a seminal for African Americans of Caribbean descent, of all slave descent. Many of the people who came there from Rosewood.
Wow.
So for the young people who just started watching The Watchmen, so my grandfather maybe had a fourth grade education. maybe the argument could be that in the 1900s, the fourth grade education might be a 12th grade education nowadays. But he single-handedly built the town by himself. And at that time, it's not, you know, it's not an entrepreneurial feat. It's, you're in a swamp. Do you want to eat?
Right.
You have kids. Right? We're going to spend the next week and we're going to build two shacks. Someone's taking this shack and one. So he also became the president of the NAACP.
Oh, wow.
Because he started the NAACP in Jupiter. He also had a garden that he's feeding people out of because there was nothing else. And then he was also, and I think this, you know, you understand this generation. I'm one generation out of the South. I grew up in the Bay Area. Many of us do not remember or do not really fully understand the effect of segregation.
Mm-hmm.
But in the South, you generally were not allowed mayors in towns that had a black side and a white side. In Texas, you're lucky if that if the leader of the black town is called boss,
yeah,
or head boy. Okay. In Jupiter, there was a very clear delineating line. In Florida, you know, to this day, it's still a very violent place. I would say that it's sport above football is.
Yeah.
And so, and the numbers bear for that out.
Yeah, they are.
But I think
do.
When it was time to blame somebody black or to take it out on the black civilization, the angry mobs would come over the line and meet instead of the boss, they would meet with the king, which was my grandfather.
Oh, wow.
And so if he needed to get slapped in the face or punched in the stomach or spit on to make sure that X amount of thousands of black people were not massacred, that's what he did. And that was sort of the family that came. So one day, you know, his eldest son, my Uncle Wester, finished his tour of World War II, and he came to the city coast that had helped win the war called Richmond,
California.
Wow. Write letters back that the younger siblings would have to read about. And my grandfather, who I say this, you know, in all seriousness, had a prescient sense about him.
Yeah.
He was connected to the old continent. He was connected to nature. He was connected to God in a very different way. And he figured out two paths for his family. So my father was the youngest of nine. He was handicapped when he was 2.5, 3.
Oh.
He was blinded in one eye.
Oh, wow.
His brothers and him were playing outside in the swamps. Slingshot with the rock launch in his eye. And I'm sure if you had even the most basic health care at that time, if you ever
been
to Dr. Kaiser, it's easy to deal with.
Yeah.
But that did not exist
right.
at that time.
Right.
And if that did exist, that doctor was middle class, and they lived in West Palm.
Right.
Right. And the money that you would have to pay to get that.
It wasn't there, yeah.
It just wasn't there. And that's one of the things, you know, we can talk about later. But essentially, my Uncle Wester, somehow put an idea in my grandfather's mind. And so he had 5 girls and 4 boys. He sent all the girls up to New York because, in his mind, they were going to get married, but he wanted them to marry men who, quote-unquote, respected an educated woman.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He definitely wanted – he felt that New York was the only place where – they were going to meet black men. I know. And it's almost like coming to America. Like,
right.
Can you see these women? Hmm. You know. So there's our connection.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, and the fat chocolate, right? My theory about
birth. Yes, yes, exactly.
And the front of the mouth. Hey. And then, he sent the rest of the boys out to the Bay Area, to San Jose, California.
Oh,
my father came out. Early 50s. And so he was all of those things at one time. He was sort of indigenous, he was black, he was small, he was handicapped. But he wasn't taking no mess at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And not that he was a trash talker.
Right.
He knew he was smart and he understood that infrastructure had to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the story, and I'm still always working to recollect this, as you know, him and his brother, Wester, my dad went to school. He actually was really smart. He was one of the first African-Americans to go
to law school.
He was kicked out for protesting, right? people don't realize how lucky they have it, right?
Like, right, I know. I bet they can protest.
You really have to accept some of your wins.
Yes.
You know, that's the curse of being. I remember being a 19-year-old in a car driving.
I do too.
Right?
Doing
things. Raining, and my uncle and my dad looking at me like,
hush.
So I think, and then my father went off and ended up finishing law school at Lincoln, and he started a practice with my uncle, and they were doing community law center. First clients were two singers who were shut down because they owed taxes. Little known band known as Ike and Tina. And so,
right?
I had this idea, and basically, him and his brother Wester convinced the federal government, I don't know how, that if you get them back in the studio, they can make records, and records sell, and records will pay their back taxes. So he got them back up and running. So you have this chunk of money to what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Well, they started setting up community law. How are they able to do that? Well, there were no lawyers in San Jose in that time. A lot of people don't appreciate this because of redlining.
Right.
When the Great Migration happened in Richmond, there were very clear lines of where we were allowed to live. Outside of Richmond, the second place we were allowed to live was San Jose.
Okay.
Fillmore and Babe's Point, Babe and the Baby were much after.
Okay.
Because they already had black populations, but you weren't allowed to still buy stuff there.
Okay.
Whereas in San Jose, you can actually, it's very much, it kind of reminds me of East Contra Costa, whereas the lines weren't drawn in the sand, you said you didn't have money yet. So that way, you could buy these properties and set up. So they went from being these attorneys to being the black attorneys because there was no other office. And then my uncle became sort of the bank for the black family.
Wow.
That company, give loans to you at a very man, make sure you're taking care of us.
Yeah.
So as they built that out, my father then came over to East Bay. Started working out of the West Oak Health Center, helping it built. And he realized that most of our folks cannot afford an attorney when they're being evicted. He really was disgusted by housing. His attitude was, if my dad can build a town in the field, why are people living in dilapidated hotels? Right, this does not make sense. And consistent. My family was consistent about this principle. If you're a bar and you're white and you don't serve black people, we're gonna sue you.
Mm.
If you're a black bar and you don't serve Mexicans, if you're a Mexican bar and you don't serve Filipinos, we're gonna sue you. You're a Filipino bar and you don't serve queer, we're gonna sue you.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is going to get a piece. And somehow during all this time while they're building up the system, they're also siphoning funds and driving food down to Moreno and their friend Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez.
Because
of some reason, oppression seems to be very singular with its focus. So it can never imagine that black people would ever take their time out of their week. But to my father and to my uncle and to my family, that was us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was us picking oranges and pineapples and papayas,
Yeah. No, totally.
We may not speak Spanish, but you can't tell me those grapes and those strawberries.
Right.
We may not come from Michoacan, but when I see the dirt on your hands.
You understand.
I see you.
Yeah.
In fact, my father,
he
would never buy me. I never got cool stuff, right? I never got the new robot.
Right.
My dad gave me what he would call an experience. We're going to go to the Yucatan Peninsula for 3 days. You don't realize until later in life you got a private tour of an Olmec pyramid.
I know.
This has a deep connection to the indigenous East African cultures. Most people nowadays have to spend, that's an archaeologist's trip.
Exactly. And the other thing is that your father had a clear understanding that in order to raise people who were going to respect not only themselves but the status of their humanity, that was necessary. You have to be – that's necessary, right?
And you have to be explicit in that. You have to be beyond intentional. Like, there has to be a codex, as we call it.
yeah.
honor code in our family, which has always been, as you climb up the ladder, don't expect it to drop, meaning your arm has to be. Not everybody's going to climb, you know, even if you think about it like sort of like the way I exercise, not everybody can skip three steps when they run stairs.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Right. You have to baby step this concept of move your arms and get it one step at a time. So some people need you to throw a hand back.
That's right.
And that's what it was. So I think as Clifford built out Legal Aid Society from a startup, one of the things that he realized was funding was hard, and one of the issues that I still wrestle with is there's always money in the black market. That's why it's called that, right?
Right, right.
But in terms of us building our own ecosystems and our supply chains, as you and I have talked,
yes.
that money ain't there because
no.
we don't invest in that thing.
No.
And recently it's become that way.
Right.
Now with VCs and billionaires and, you know, shout out to Hove, shout out to Nas.
Right, all of that.
Oh, that wasn't there.
No.
Yeah, that wasn't, they weren't donating to you 10 years ago. The point being, he had to create a sustainable structure that could have his own money. So he figured out was, he fundraised and he bought buildings, and then he used three floors of the building for services.
Oh, wow.
And the rest would be rented out. So it was a social enterprise. And this was, you know, 20 years before Delancey.
Right. I was going to say, this is a...
And he figured it out. And to this day, even the work I do at Renaissance, I'm inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it was figuring out a model. But if I said to him, hey, Dad, you know you're a social entrepreneur, in the same way that there's no monument, you know, it's like, we're doing work here. I don't have time for that. So
yeah.
I think the joke and part of my journey has been, you know, I've learned, you know, we've talked about this. My wife has encouraged me. As much as she's an introvert, she's reminded me that if I don't tell my story, somebody else will, and they'll find a way to not put me in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, now that I have this sort of vendetta against Alzheimer's, I'm very much about telling my father's story and then leaving enough breadcrumbs and media for my one-day children. They can tell my story at least. But,
exactly.
but the work has to come first.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a lot of it. So for me, my dad to me, and I'm a comic book fan, you know, we talked about this.
I am too. You know I am.
Why not right? To me, my father is actually the original Black Panther. He's T'Chaka. He had this huge Avenger team that at and people would line up for advice and to get involved and invest. And how many times did I walk in the house bumping my new NWA album and he's like, turn it off, go back outside. You know,
yeah,
right?
absolutely.
Better than that.
Yeah.
But for me, I always wanted to have my seat at the table. And the challenge that I have, I have two older brothers. And my father always encouraged us to love this. My mom encouraged us to love this. But my parents were just exceptionally smart. You know, my father was trying to deal with inequity around policy and economy. My mom was, you know, doing prison reform. Right?
Yeah,
and
realizing
he was also one of the first SFPD officers.
Oh, wow.
From the inside,
wow.
The inside of how they lock people up.
Yeah.
The pipeline was in the 60s.
Man, and this is such a history.
Anyway, number maybe one of the first 10 women to get a PhD at UC Berkeley at a time when she would walk around with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, a little bit of pressure on their kids, right?
Just a tad.
My eldest brother became an incredible healer, but before that, he became the Chinese martial artists and fighters in the world. Man.
Oh,
so
wow.
He ends up becoming, like my Uncle Lester, he becomes the
Okay.
And that kind of becomes one of the few black quantities, you know, has a PhD. Where do I find myself, right?
You find yourself receiving the Chevron Equip Pitch
right.
Award.
And that's, I think, how it gets
right?
There.
That's where you find yourself. And
for me, it's very much about how do I get, if the team's already assembled, what skills do I need to develop to be at the table? To feel not only like an imposter, but to feel like everybody else on the team is still supported by what I bring to them.
Exactly.
And I think that's kind of to answer your question about my father and looking at that. It's always that. And then also there's this thing, you know, you wake up one day and it's always about going somewhere, and this tiny little man can command the attention of the giant West Oakland, East Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just this, you know, he was like highly formed. And it was always sweet, Mr. Sweet. Yes, Mr. Sweet.
Yeah.
And then you wake up one day and someone says it near you and your dad's not around.
Yeah.
And so I think that in my own way, I think for what I was trying to do is just be a 2.0. Not do anything special.
Right.
But just, I already see what's on the table. How do I enhance every piece that's here?
Right?
How do I bring a little bit of technology to my folks? How do I bring some of this policy? How do I develop, you know, some of this healing?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's kind of how I fell into the stuff that I've done.
Well, and Brett, you know, we all are that. We all are the tiny seeds that are planted from generations before us. And we are now the tiny seeds for the generations yet to come. And one of the reasons that Life is a Sacred Journey exists is because of 2015, a group of interns coming and saying to me, elevate the conversation. You're having the conversation with us in this room, actually this very room, this very table, but nobody else is hearing it, and it's inspiring us. I have never come to this platform or at this moment look at myself and go, I'm the inspiration. It's not that. It's about being a vessel, and I think that's what your dad, that's what your uncle, that's what they did. They became vessels for their living purpose, lived it out, went even in the directions that probably other people said, why are you doing that? You could do this for yourself and be la, 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 la.
Definitely, especially after, you know, again, he had success in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow, you know, again, I'm a kid, like, yeah, I want to go off into entertainment. My dad's like, I've been there, and, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But you did.
And then I end up there. Anyway, and then I find myself at this moment, and it's ironic.
Yeah.
I've got this point in my career where I was making a ton of money behind the scenes in the music industry, but hip-hop had gone from something where I felt like it was encouraging a growth mindset in African-American to being
Yes.
Like it was actually you know, from the generation we came from, like, hip-hop made you read a book. You had to keep up.
The language, this is what Brett and I, and for those of you, you know, that don't understand, the music that you're hearing today that they're calling rap, okay, or whatever they're calling it these days, because I'm not in tune as much as I used to be. But the hip-hop music was poetry. It was the spoken word around what was going on in the community. So language was key. The words, the vocabulary was amazing, so amazing that they did very rarely use any negative curse words or any of that because they understood the power of language and the vibration of vowels and consonants and that exclamation being, and that's what Brett is talking about. That's the era that he was in the business and then saw it change. We're both around. We saw it change.
I think we were on the banned list before 9/11, but I definitely knew I saw the banned list after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Facetious, but it was basically, you know, we're gonna sell you death and liquor and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking about this. You're not gonna get the radio. But at that same time, I was so conflicted, and in a lot of ways, I was at a point where to keep up with that lifestyle, because everybody's, you know, they're starting their days afternoon, they're up all night.
Yeah, been there, done that.
If not for my father being diagnosed, you know, I could have ended up down that road and been lost. But I think in a lot of ways, transforming into a caregiver not only saved me,
wow,
and I definitely know it prolonged my father's life.
Wow.
But I also feel like there was a sense of redemption in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also I think one thing that is really important that I always want to say to anybody who is anywhere you're in the caregiver journey, because I think hindsight is 20/20, and it's very easy to attach yourself. When you start, the bar that you have for yourself is hugely unrealistic. Your grief will tell you lies, You have no idea.
But,
you know, so for me, some of them were this thing about my dad losing his memory and flights, not getting off the plane and getting this only happened to my family.
Right, right. That's
God
right.
God is very mad at us.
Yes.
Yes.
What?
Right?
He hates us.
He hates us. And he hates you in particular.
That's right.
Or if I just would spend a little bit more time loving my dad, just things like that. And so I think it's really important to remember in the beginning, we set a very high standard and that there is, and that's why platforms like this, A Sacred Journey, are so critical, because they're really, do you have the brain power to read on forums for 3 hours to understand how to do this stuff?
Exactly.
When you've
exactly.
been up all day and you're listening and you're doing stuff?
Yep. Yeah.
And if you're driving from appointment to appointment and you can listen to this, this is far more. This is like community college. I mean, if I had it my way, they'd teach this in high school, right? So, because this is the reality.
Yes. Yes. And it is, this is what I realized the other day. You know, I ponder, Brett and I are so much alike. Other than gender, I'm not talking gender and all that, but what we ponder, like I ponder my old age, and every once in a while I'll vision a moment in way in the future where my kids are around me, you know, through the grace that I'm still around, and it's like they're trying to navigate this woman that is no longer this woman, and they're saying, what do we do? Mommy wouldn't want it this way, or the other one saying, but that's not the conversation she had with me. It is not anything, even though they've been around me for 23 years in this business, that I can tell them that when that moment happens, that they're not going to be confused. But if they have a goody grab bag of stuff, Brett, that's
absolutely.
What we talked about.
With Army knife, toolbox, absolutely. And some how-to videos. I mean, that's one thing I really came to, and that you're so right, which is, but, you know, one thing I really want to come across to a lot of people, I think about this.
Yeah.
I don't have kids, but I talk about this all the time. I'm still, like, pushing my wife, please have a quick warning system when I become that overbearing dad. Right? But I'm not listening.
Wow.
So I don't push my wife. But also, there's going to be a video. It's not going to be a but dad said. But look at the video.
Right.
What did it say in writing? What's the business plan?
Right.
Because we've been through this.
Yeah.
We've seen it.
We've been through
it. And I'm doing
this.
Everything to prevent it, but you can't control every possibility. Maybe that's the strategy mind in me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's sort of what I bring to the table, the little brother who understands how to beat the game the first time.
Right.
Right? And I'm watching everybody.
Right. You are the little brother,
You have to visualize even the uncomfortable things.
Yes.
You know, as I mentioned, being a lifetime martial artist and fighter, you know, you want to visualize success, but you don't want to be surprised when you get someone grabs you and takes you down.
No. Well, and that's
you're like, I know how to fight here, too. And I think that's one of those things where you have to have this, what is this end point on this threat, right?
Yes, yes.
You know, sort of that moment in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
To this possibility.
Yeah.
How do I walk backwards? So for my children, if they become caregivers, at least, you know, there's a video, there's resources, there's all these things rather than, for example, when I told you the story, I remember when we realized we had to put my father in skilled nursing.
It was a risk factor.
Oh, and thank you so much earlier. I remember I was listening to one of the episodes and you were talking about why does the Alzheimer's facility always have people in the back of the room?
I hate it.
For the money we pay?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why do they have to be locked away? It's not like it's Alzheimer's and there's cancer. No, it's all for Alzheimer's, and you have a security door that you can break into with a SWAT team, but they have to be in the back.
I know.
But I only know that because being the nerdy kid I was, loving my dad, I opened a spreadsheet with my older brother. And we went to 30 in Marin County.
Wow.
30 in Contra Costa.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Every Bay Area county to understand. And I realized the story wasn't going to change much.
Right.
And one of the biggest lessons I learned, I remember we were, after like week four, I was just exhausted. 3 months. I was dining. It's a nice garden. He said, yeah, it's for you. His dad's not going to know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to, like, take a moment and deal with that. And I said, I think part of that is one of the journeys is understanding things that I used to be deeply ashamed about that I felt like if I hadn't been investing my time in music, I would have been more attentive to my father's needs.
Yeah.
This is a lie.
No.
But that same thing that made me good at corralling a bunch of people and saying, if you don't get on this bus and get up and go to the next radio station, I'm going to choke you out.
Yeah.
That same mentality got me to turn around and say, you know, I got this appointment. And if I let this power game go, my dad's not going to get to this appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to watch this person really quick and see that this nurse likes quarter wire, you know, those little 50 cents.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to Costco.
Yeah.
And I'm going to buy a case. I'm going to bring them new flavors. So that way, that 20-minute Kaiser check-in turns into 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That way, because, you know, the system is not set up to deal with the illness.
No.
It's only set up to deal with...
Yes.
Caregiving. It's set up to deal with checkpoints.
Yes. Yes.
If you're going to take your father for a 10 o'clock appointment, even if you get to the parking lot at 9, well, the drive made him rattle him. He might need to have a little bit of a foot rub and a back massage and a hug and watch a movie for and that's not fit into
Nope.
If they're going to turn off your appointment, if you're 15 minutes late, you better have in the trunk that smart water.
Yep.
Right?
So love that.
If they're at 10:13, hey, nice to Myra, hey, I brought you purple today.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And that those same massaging are those tools, and I think that's one of the things I'm really trying to encourage anybody in this journey of caregiving, especially at the inception point, is to, one, remember that the skills that you have that make you great in other places are equally applicable.
Even though
you don't have the same success, you can't measure it.
That's right.
You can't tell yourself you're going to dunk the ball every day. You're not going to have a win every day.
You've got to
stop using that vocabulary.
Right.
But there are things that make you great.
Right.
In other spaces in your life, and they're going to make you a great caregiver.
And Brett, you know, one of the things that you're talking about that's really coming out in your language is the ability, you know, the tree is my, all of them, everybody in my virtual neighborhood know this. The tree is my symbol. When I think of myself, I think of myself as a living, breathing tree, right? And so I love the tree. And
we have a number of 50,000 of wildlife.
Right, you know, it's just amazing. But what you're talking about is the fact that What I like about trees is they don't repel any season that they're in, even the season in which they must give up their life or what appears that they're giving up their life due to fire or whatever. But under that ground and under that ash, after everything is done and said, life is still happening. And the repopulation happens unless man goes in and does what man does, because we're the ones that are victimizing the earth. So let's just call that what it is.
Yeah.
But it is about that cycle of life. So you were a son where you were able to observe, like you said. I love that picture of like down there looking up at everybody, listening to all the sounds and hearing all that. But then you've taken that into your DNA. It's in your skin. To go into the lives of young people now, you've been a caregiver, you've worked in the industry that every young person,
They want to be in, right? Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And they don't really want to be there.
They don't really want to be there.
That girl who just another guy to like them. So wait until I make it big as a rapper, right? Or, you know, they don't really want to be there.
Well, and you don't understand, because even when I began my career in the fashion business and was making, like you say, lots of money and doing what I loved and was created for, still am though, because I was got recreated, right? Yeah. But from a young person, the money was better than alcohol, better than drugs, better than boyfriends, better than anything, to be able to walk into a store and pay stupid amount of money for things.
Right.
And the camaraderie and the people that come to you and tell you how magnificent and wonderful and beautiful.
Yeah, the sycophancy and the
the
cult mentality.
And so therefore you become something that you don't even know you're transforming into, because you're so focused on all of that until the day, and this happened to me, where I sat down and said, I got money in the bank, but I wish I was dead.
I was just going to say, that's why I believe all these industries have to have parties all the time. It's not to celebrate, right?
It's to pump you back up.
Right. To keep you, right. Let's keep you fit, right?
Yeah.
We're on 10 yet, right?
Yeah.
We're great, right?
Yeah.
Have some more champagne, right? Take off your glasses and get in the pool. We're having fun, right? And that's part of it, right?
Like, but it also robs you, because I thought about this the other day.
Yeah.
How fortunate I am that my journey did not take me into the dark side all the way. But the reality is, I still was exposed to some stuff that have left some marks on me that I'll take to the grave.
Can I ask you this?
Yeah, please.
Well, maybe this is me working through my own.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I hadn't seen the stain on the pattern, right? Mm-hmm. Or from a philosophical, metaphysical work we do together, if I hadn't been able to look past it into the abyss and past it, I don't know that I'd nearly be as effective as I am now.
No. And I know that to be true, Brett, for you and for me. That it is that brush that has given me the strength and the courage to speak the truth without fear.
That's
what makes it feel like.
And that's absolutely, I think.
Yeah. There we go.
For me, at least, I've always had that issue where I ran my mouth too much, and I've always had too much fear with this, especially growing up between here in Sacramento and living in Sacramento next to white supremacists and being victimized and tortured all the time. I've always had this attitude like, I'm still going to talk about you even if I go to the hospital, right? And I think one of the things I learned.
Yeah.
I think a couple of months after, it's funny, it's the anniversary of it. I lost my father October 2010. A couple of months after that, it was Christmas, obviously, and we were walking on mission. My girlfriend and I were and I came out, and a guy in a wheelchair came up to us and pulled a gun.
Oh, boy.
And I talked him down. And I basically was like, looks like you're in a lot of pain. I really don't want to put you in more pain.
Yeah.
And, my wife was like, how did you do that? Because there's not time. And after you've already sailed over the boat, and you've gone to the other side with your father and you come back without him.
Yes. Yeah.
You think your little gun scares me?
Yeah, no.
I'm more afraid of what's inside of me and what I could do to him than I'm afraid of that little pea shooter.
Oh my gosh, this is so powerful. Folks, this is Brett Sweet. Brett Sweet is talking to us and laying down some wisdom here. This is the key. When people ask me, how do you go into that homeless encampment under the bridge or behind, down a road somewhere, it's because I don't walk with that. I don't walk with, these people are dangerous, these people are going to kill me, these people are going to. I walk with, no, I don't walk with that. I walk with, obviously this is where I'm supposed to be, so I'm protected, I'm safe. And yes, there have been people around me that probably wanted to hurt me or whatever, but because I look them straight in the eye and I say good morning or good evening or how you doing, brother, sister, I love you, and so does a universal something bigger than both of us, they're like this. Wait a minute. What just happened here?
Yeah. It really is the energy you bring. And that's hard for people to understand sometimes because you have to be part of your complete self.
Yes.
You can't just be cosmetic about it. You can't just have one day for 3 hours where you're right.
And you know, Brett, there's nothing I can do about death. So if it is my destiny to be killed in the forest with the homeless people, there is really nothing that I can do to stop that.
And I look at it, I have a different perspective. If I believe what I believe and I know what I know, and I just said that I really do enjoy being around trees. You know, I just, you know, like you're, it's all, it's really about assemblage points.
Yes.
And your reality and your practice and all the other pieces that you bring into it. I guess that's another encouragement. If I can go back and have a conversation with myself, can I change anything? No.
Yeah.
The one thing I would tell myself is that I need to train to be a coach, caregiver. And so I think I heard this the other day from, it's so deep, the woman who's doing the virtual caregiving, she's talking about the energy work and all the
stuff. Oh, yeah, Dawn. Dawn Renee.
Getting bit by, like, a black widow.
Yeah.
And she really resonated with me because I remember, you know, when I got too intoxicated with working in entertainment, I gave up a lot of my early childhood training and stuff. I stopped doing Tai Chi in my internal work. I stopped doing acupuncture. I smoked acid a day. I drank, you know.
And I can so relate.
Yeah, when I started the caregiver journey.
Yeah.
I found that I was having interactions with my father that could not be explained by the neurologist.
Right.
The social worker.
Yes.
As I was reading.
Yeah.
So I remember my father, I would sit with him. And you know, I could hear his voice. And I put my hand on his leg. And I could hear him kind of guide my hand. And so we'd go to the appointment. And I'd say, can you ultrasound his leg right here? They find a blood clot. They said, how'd you know it was there? I don't know. But he told me that's where it hurts. And I'm like, well, your father hasn't talked to you. I don't know. And so bringing that up got me back into practicing Tai Chi, things like that. And then I think about these caregivers, and I heard that story getting a hernia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm reminded of 2000, a story of, you know, 2014, I walked with a cane, right? I allowed myself to get broken.
Oh, my
and
God.
I knew that I needed to change my life. I had been diagnosed with sleep apnea. I'd lost a friend of mine to it. And I knew I needed to change my life, and I'm not stupid, so I heard you need to run to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 290 pounds.
Oh, wow. I can't imagine.
I had like six I was about one apnea away from having it. And so, you know, me being Brett, Mr. Try Hard, you know, I put on my running shoes, I try to go running. And she's just smoking. Hold on. Wait a minute. So I run to catch her. And I get up next to her and she's saying, how are you doing? I was like, this really hurts. And I stopped. I said, okay, we'll stop. And she stopped. And she's like, well, stop. I'm like, I can't. I can't. Shopping cart going down the hill.
Yep.
Remember that show, The Greatest American Hero?
Yes, I remember.
I literally, it's on Claremont, and I fly through this one.
Oh, my God.
Fun. Oh. It was one of the best blessings. So I'm looking up, and you know when your friend scrubs, and you're just laughing, and my wife's laying down there next to me, we're just laughing, because I'm like, oh, now I got to buy this lady a new friend. She's looking out. You know, a little white lady looking out the window, and she's like, dude, I'm calling 911. Do I call to help you? And it was an eye opener because I had put in my mind that I'll always be able to run.
Right.
And now that when I stood up, I couldn't. And I was like, wow, how arrogant. How arrogant of you.
Yes.
That you are owed this after years of abusing your body and you've never done anything. And so 2 days later, we go to an acupuncturist around the corner, and they do a massage, and I come out, and I'm still on my canes, and the team goes down and gets me a cup of coffee. And I hear this, hey, Brett, and I look up, it's my old martial arts teacher.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I just came out of physical therapy. I'm like, handicap, why? And I tell him everything. He's like, well, you should go train. And I'm like, bro, I can barely put a shirt on. you know, 3 years later, I lost 110 pounds.
Wow.
I can lift 200-pound men over my head. I can do it. So I bring that full circle where in June, when my mom had a bunch of falls, and I care again for her. And
yes,
her,
I know.
When COPD started to talk about, when I pick her up and put her back in the wheelchair, she's like, oh, my God, are you strong?
Yeah.
Because I knew, at least with my mom, I knew I'd be here now.
Yes.
And then the second cycle of that is March of 2020 comes, and COVID shuts down my gym, and I can't work out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a couple of months, I start getting up in the morning and meeting my martial arts teacher. He tells me to.
Mm-hmm.
He did fail me the last time.
Right.
And we start getting up and doing Tai Chi and boxing at 6 in the morning in the park.
There you
go. Our wedding, right?
There you go.
Or we just converted our living room into a convertible Beagle studio.
Oh, there you go.
But again, aggression being,
yes.
I'm training for this moment because being a very good caregiver for is important to me.
Yes.
Being a caregiver for my mother-in-law is important to me.
Yes.
Also, I have the skill set and that I want to remind myself not to be arrogant, that the thing, my comfort zones can be taken at any time.
Right.
If I'm so dependent going into a building to train, I need to be able to do it in my backyard.
That's right. That's right.
And then those skill sets of still being able to have those conversations and being able to use that intuitive side of you, however you develop it.
That's right.
Whether it's doing internal martial arts, you're doing yoga, meditation, all of these
things.
Because these are the conversations that are going to happen with the love person.
That's right.
It's not going to happen verbally. Mm-hmm. Lucky. I mean, I was listening when I was hearing about the trilogy computer when a woman can, like, talk through her eyes. I mean, you're lucky if you get that.
Yes, right? You're lucky.
I'm planning for the scenario where you don't have that.
Exactly.
Different things, and I think that all that work. But I think the lesson that I always want to bring back to any caregiver is, one, take care of yourself, and I know I've heard you say it, so I want to echo this.
Please.
If you can't care for yourself, you will be a useless caregiver.
Yes.
Two, torn rotator cuffs later,
yep.
Or herniated disc, a bad knee, I can guarantee you this is true.
It's true.
Okay?
It's true.
With PTSD,
yep.
Sleepwalking, you know what I mean?
All of it. All of it.
I have the list of all the work. Okay? I mean, I used to live in the ER with my dad.
Yes.
So I can guarantee that if you don't take care of yourself, if you're not, and it's a lifestyle thing.
It is a lifestyle thing.
You need to start your week knowing what your self-care day is and build everything.
Exactly.
Not the, I'll fit in some self-care. No. I mean, if you think about your favorite beach, my dad used to say, and I think this is what he's prepping me for, where does the lifeguard sit?
That's right.
Lifeguard's not in the water.
Nope.
What do you think if you're in the water, it's easier to get to somebody drowning?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but you'll never see them.
That's right.
You need to be in a position where you can access, and that comes from a sense of remote self-care that has to happen.
I'm going to continue the Facebook Live conversation with Brett Sweet for a few more minutes, but we are going to sign off on Blog Talk Radio. So I want to thank you all for coming to Blog Talk Radio today. And Brett Sweet has been our guest. You can go to Facebook Live so that you can continue watching because we're going to wrap up, but I have a couple more questions to ask him. And before you leave, I want to tell you that Vault, the wonderful company organization that we interviewed early back, has made available to us 500 online memberships. And if you remember, Vault was the organization that has put together a caregiver online sort of, I'm going to call it a diary, so that you can put in all the information, medications, things that you want done, not done, things for the person that you love. They are giving us 500 free memberships. So we need you to get a hold of us at Life is a Sacred Journey, and you can do that. You have our email, and we'll make sure it gets blasted out, and we will give those out to you. And this is a remarkable thing. I'm going to open my own account as well. It's to put all that data in, either for someone you're caring for or for yourself, so that when someone is caring for you, they know what's happening. So, Vault, thank you so much for sponsoring Life is a Sacred Journey this way and all of our listeners and folks out there. It is available on the Apple platform, Android platform coming out, and we will continue to give them out. Email us and let us know. Life is a Sacred Journey. If you're interested, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram. You can find us. So, and we'll hold on to them and get them out to you. Thank you, Vault. Merry Christmas, all of you. So, to the Blog Talk Radio folks, thank you so much for joining us for another episode. We love you. We care about you. Have a merry, merry Christmas and happy new year. So, we'll let you go. And we're still on Facebook.